Welcome to Healthcare Unfiltered. I am your host, Shadi Nabhan. I'm a hematologist and a medical oncologist with interest in all aspects of healthcare delivery, treatment, leadership, mentorship, and policy. Folks, I appreciate your support. Thank you very much for tuning in to this special episode of Healthcare Unfiltered, addressing another issue pertaining to the ABIM, the American Board of Internal Medicine, and what we are dealing with, and specifically the back fees and what's happening there. As if you have been following this podcast, as you should, you probably know that I have been covering the issue with the ABIM maintenance of certification and recertification for a while. It all started, to give you context, last year when the ABIM decided to tweet that while you're on your vacation, you should really consider doing your ABIM recertification questions because somehow this does not interfere with your vacation time. A silly tweet that they subsequently apologized, but this led one of the most prolific hematologists on Twitter and on social media, Dr. Aaron Goodman, to start a petition to end the maintenance of certification. This petition gathered over 20,000 signatures agreeing with him and started really a movement on social media and other platforms to explain the importance of ending this, because the current situation is you get your first certification, which lasts for 10 years. After 10 years, you have to either recertify or to be enrolled in longitudinal knowledge assessment. Longitudinal knowledge assessment, they send you 30 questions every quarter for a total of 5 years. You have to do one or the other, either the recertification every 10 years or the LKA, like I just mentioned. You have to add to this the maintenance of certification points. You have to pay all of the fees so you could be labeled as certified in the subspecialty and the specialty boards that you are part of. Otherwise, if you don't fulfill all of these criteria, you will be labeled as not certified. Now, again, for context, when all of this issue of time-limited certification started, the ABIM decided to grandfather folks who had their certification prior to 1990. And in the conversation we had with Dr. Richard Barron, the CEO and president of the ABIM, he admitted on my show here on Healthcare Unfiltered that the decision to grandfather these folks was simply political, simply because the ABIM did not want to piss off everybody, and they thought that these folks who were older, they probably could be grandfathered. So this really should tell you right there that the decision to grandfather these folks is really a proof that the goal behind the recertification and the time-limited certification is not really the improvement of quality care, because if you really want that, then nobody should be grandfathered. And again, on this show that was aired in August of 2023, Dr. Barron did mention specifically that this was a political decision to grandfather folks. I hosted then, leaders of our own organizations, the American Society of Hematology, the American Society of Clinical Oncology, and I had the pleasure of having the CEO of ASCO on my show. ASCO did send a survey to the ASCO members, and not everybody responded to the survey, which is understandable. Nobody responds to all the surveys, but it was the highest response rate amongst all ASCO surveys that have ever been sent. And in that survey, the majority of folks understandably agreed that the maintenance of certification and the current process is not really conducive. It does not help clinical care, and it's really done for other motives. I had the pleasure of hosting Dr. Wes Fisher. Dr. Fisher has started this movement for over a decade. Dr. Fisher, who has been on this show, is an electrophysiologist here in the Chicago area. And he has spent a lot of time. Please follow him on Twitter and read his blogs, read his articles, and you're going to learn a lot about what he uncovered pertaining to the ABIM and the certification and recertification. And then we got to learn about the NBPASS, which is the National Board of Physicians and Surgeons. The president is Dr. Paul Tiersten, and Paul appeared also on my show, and we talked about the movement that he actually started to create that board. And the issue here is that, again, what you'll have to realize if you're listening to this is that most hospitals and university that are accredited by the ACGME, they have an agreement, or the ACGME type institutions don't allow physicians to practice unless they are certified by the ABIM. And payers also, in order for them to pay for the physician fees, these physicians need to be certified by the ABIM. So in a sense, the ABIM has really a complete monopoly over how these academic institutions are dealing with and the payers. So, you know, if you're a physician who is practicing at an ACGME institution, you pretty much have no choice. You do need to be certified and recertified by the ABIM. Otherwise, you could lose your privileges and staff privileges in seeing patients, and you don't get paid for your physician fees. The NBPAS has made a very good movement in trying to get hospitals and healthcare systems to approve that certification for physicians who are practicing at these sites, but these sites cannot be ACGME accredited because the ACGME continue to maintain that they have to have the ABIM certification. When you think about all of this, you immediately will realize that none of this is really something to help the improvement of quality care or keeping up to date for physicians who are practicing. There are folks out there who are going to say, well, you know, medicine is changing rapidly. There are a lot of new drugs, lots of new things, and we really have to do this in order to assure that physicians stay up to date. There's a quality of care, quality assurance, quality control, and if we don't do this, then physicians cannot keep up. And this could jeopardize clinical care. It is factually incorrect. Personally, I am enrolled in the longitudinal knowledge assessment of hematology, medical oncology, and internal medicine. So I get 30 questions every quarter for these three boards. And the questions that I know how to answer, I'm going to answer them right away. The ones that I don't, I simply use Google or UpToDate to find the answer. My knowledge base is not, the quality of the knowledge is not really changing at all. Because in reality, when you are seeing patients in practice and you're having some of these, if you're encountering something you don't know, you are going to look it up anyway. The way we practice medicine today in 2024 is very different than 2020 and 2010 and the year 2000. However, unfortunately, a lot of things that you are hearing about today is clearly related to the fact that none of this is translating into better quality care or better care for patients. The reason for this podcast is today, Aaron Goodman was told by his hospital that he is no longer board certified in hematology, the specialty that he is actually, that he practices every single day. And he was told also that, he needs to get the board certification, otherwise he cannot see patients. Now, this is Aaron, although I don't always agree with all of his views, but he is an excellent teacher. He likes to educate folks on Twitter and elsewhere. And really, when he puts his teaching hat, he is an amazing teacher and a great, and he's very passionate about it. And he does hematology. He knows hematology so well. He knows hematology and BMT. So suddenly he found himself not board certified. So he called the credentialing office and they told him, well, you're not. He called the ABIM and the ABIM said, well, of course, you haven't paid your internal medicine fees for the past 5 years. And he said, but I don't want to have internal medicine and so on. And he put on a thread and I reached out to Aaron and said, you know what? We need to do a podcast on this. We need to make sure we explain to everybody who is listening and viewing this what actually happened. So today's podcast continues on the ABIM saga. I would love for you to share this podcast with other folks, with other colleagues. Please subscribe to this podcast. Let others know about this podcast. It is really important. And you, if you are listening to this, my advice is just don't work for the ABIM. There is no reason for you to go and write questions. It is not going to add much. In fact, you're going to be pissing off pretty much all of your colleagues. So I would appreciate if you subscribe to this show, rate it, let your friends and colleagues know about it. And if you love hematology, by the way, check out my other podcast, The Hemonc Pulse, which is focused only on clinical hematology. If you love reading books, check out my book that came out last year, Toxic Exposure, The True Story Behind the Monsanto Trials and the Search for Justice. And my upcoming book that's coming out in the fall of 2024, The Cancer Journey, Understanding Diagnosis, Treatment, Recovery, and Prevention. Without further ado, Dr. Aaron Goodman, Papa Heme on Healthcare Unfiltered, talking with me again, the ABIM, the MOC, and these back fees that he had to pay to the ABIM, and they exceeded $2,000. Tell us your current board situation. Are you board certified?
Well, right now I am, although I've taken three separate board exams, medicine, hematology, and oncology, all within the last decade. I am right now uncertified. I am an uncertified physician.
So Papa Heme, you're currently not certified in hematology, not certified in oncology, not certified in internal medicine, and you dare to tweet educational stuff on Twitter.
Yeah, you can look me up, and I am not certified to take care of patients per the ABIM.
Are you are you in jeopardy of losing your job at UCSD?
A few days ago, I got an email from our credentialing office informing me that I was no longer certified for all three of those boards, which I was at least a month ago, at least I thought. And I emailed them back. I said, oh, you must be mistaken. I let my internal medicine lapse on purpose, which I took in 2014. And I just chose to maintain my hematology board, which was in 2017. So a decade, it's not 2027. And they screenshotted me saying that, no, you are mistaken, Dr. Goodman. You are uncertified. You need to fix this or I cannot work at the university.
Okay.
So that was the email I got.
Let's just get context for viewers and listeners here. Usually when you finish your fellowship or your residency, you sit for the ABIM internal medicine board or subspecialty board. That board lasts for 10 years, correct?
Yes. So, well, it used to last forever and then they changed it to last for a decade. But yes, when you sign up and take the exam, they're like, you'll need to do this in a decade again, or after a decade's passed, you can do their longitudinal assessments, which is in place of the 10-year exam. So instead of doing a high stakes exam every decade, you do some questions I forget the time frame, but you have to do one of those, but 10 years from taking the exam.
You have to do the 10 years or the longitudinal assessment. Yeah. You have to pay the fees every year, no matter what. And you have to get the maintenance certification exam.
Yes.
So I don't understand, why were you told you're not certified if you just took the 2017 hematology boards? It's not 2027. You have 10 years. Why are you not certified in hematology?
Yeah. So, first I thought, is it a mock thing? Do I need to catch up on some mock? And yes, there was some maintenance of certification I needed to do. But when I asked if I just do these simple maintenance of certification, am I good? And they said, no. And I said, why not? They said, because my internal medicine fees were past overdue. Okay. So in 2014, I took the exam. I let it expire on purpose. I chose as myself to no longer carry that board. And I just forgot about it. But what the ABIM told me over the phone was that in order to do my mock for hematology, I had to back pay the last 5 years of late fees for internal medicine, even though I had voluntarily chosen to let that board go. And when I took that board, it was to last for 10 years.
This is honestly very strange. So in order for you to do the MOC for hematology, you need to back pay the 5 years of late fees of internal medicine, yet you voluntarily chose to just basically give up because you were not told in 2014 that this is going to be the case.
I believe I was not told. So I don't remember ever hearing that in 2014 when I paid my $4,000 or $3,000 for the internal medicine board that young Dr. Goodman, when you choose to become certified in Heme-Onc, your Heme-Onc boards will be dependent on you keeping up your internal medicine board. That was unknown to me. And not only that, I did keep it up. I took the exam and I got my 10 years. And it's only as of January 1st, 2024, that I was no longer certified in medicine. But they told me in order to keep up with my Heme-Onc, meaning for me to have the privilege to give the money to take my Heme-Onc, I needed to pay my last 5 years of internal medicine mock, although I made the decision a while ago not to keep up with internal medicine.
How but much were these fees?
I could not certify in heme until I paid for my medicine, which How was over $2,000. It was like $2,100.
Yeah. The weird thing about this, Aaron, is that you cannot keep up the heme unless you pay for something that you don't want to even keep.
No. I took the 10-year. And it was supposed to last for 10 years. But yes, there were mock fees during those 5 years that I did not do because I was not planning on keeping that. Right. And but for me to then, I need one of these. First of all, I don't want any of them, but I need one of them to practice at a university. That's the rule that my university has, which we can get to. I don't think it should be a rule, but it is a rule. So I need to keep heme. So I said, okay, let me just give you the mock points for heme, which I already had because I'd gone to Ash. I just needed to do the secretarial work of getting them those points. They said, no, even if you submitted those points, it will not count until you pay your medicine late fees, which was over $2,000.
And basically, you're going to pay these over $2,000 fees, and they're going to deactivate the internal medicine.
So what I said was, so I don't want to keep medicine, so what do I have to do? They're like, deactivate it, and then this won't be a problem. Okay, I go, well, I want to deactivate it now. They go, you can do that, but you still have to pay the $2,000 to get your heme. So basically what they were telling me, what they did tell me, is pay $2,000, just rip up $2,000, then deactivate medicine. So I'm going to pay $2,000 for something I don't want for the privilege then to deactivate it. So then it's not a problem in the future. So I urge all of my colleagues, at least for the time being, at least if you took this as of 2014, I don't know the rules before because the ABIM changes it all the time and no human being on earth can keep up with all the rules that they change, to just deactivate your medicine immediately if you're already certified in some specialty. It will serve you no good other than running into the problem that I just ran into of back paying fees. So that right now is a temporary solution. I would have deactivated it if someone explained this to me a while ago, I wouldn't have kept my medicine. So I wrote him a check for $2,000 today. Yeah. Just did. Yeah. I had to.
Literally, what they're telling you is because over the past 5 years, you were labeled as certified by internal medicine, then you need to pay us back for that label that you did not even use and you had like no reason to even have.
And that was their, I guess that's their argument, which I guess could be a valid argument. I mean, but then that needs to be transparent. And it's clearly, that's how they get away with all this. It's maybe somehow it was, we can't. I don't believe it, but this is just one of many administrative things that I have to keep up with these rules and like, I had no idea. No one had any idea. I'm not the only. Many my colleagues got a similar email. I can see on Twitter many people shared, oh my God, how this happened to me too. So clearly the communication. Remember, ABIM communicates. We listen. They don't fucking listen. This is clearly a scam, and they got my tooth. They know very well. Even the most, I'm the most against ABIM on earth. I don't want to give them a penny. But you're right. I can't just get fired. I mean, I have three kids.
Literally, you've got no choice.
It was worth it to me to rip up $2,000 so I could still have a job. And they know that, and that's how they get away with it.
They know that because they have issues with the hospitals and the payers.
Yeah.
Let me back up a little bit. Me and you had a podcast with Dr. Rich Barron. At the time, he was the CEO. I actually can't find him on Twitter anymore. I don't know if he just deleted
mysteriously vanished, just like his job.
He just basically deleted his Twitter because ABIM listens. So by listening, they just delete their Twitter account so they don't get bothered. But we had a podcast with him And in that podcast, he clearly said that you can give up your I am, but I think we may not have clarified that you have to give it up after you have paid all of the dues.
I mean, and who? I guess I should have asked. Like, how was I supposed to know to ask
that? I mean,
that?
We didn't know.
Was it clear. I bet he didn't even. I mean, I don't even know when they changed this rule. At some point, they made it where they tied these things together, and it clearly wasn't transparent because there's many doctors like me as I speak that are in a similar situation.
You know, what is pretty interesting is these, to your point, these rules get changed all the time. There's no check and balances. There are no voting. You can't vote on these. There's no vote on these rules whatsoever. You just do the rules. And these are rules that dictate what happens to you and what happens to the others. And there's no voting system. So this is like a self-appointed organization that makes the rules on the fly. And they tell you what the rules are, and you have no say in whether you approve these rules or not. It is rather fascinating.
No, it's and tough. It's mind-boggling, and I'm not gonna lie. And I know this. I'm not trying to be dramatic. When I got that email, it's pretty scary to get that email, right?
Of course.
It's scary. And then I didn't work today. I didn't. I'm on actually break. My kids are off school. We're gonna enjoy our vacation. I spent this morning on the phone with ABIM, literally making them repeat what I just told you to make it before I was going about to give them $2,000. I wanted to know for sure this is what I had to do. And it was what I had to do. And then I had to spend the time, the mock that I'd already gone to conferences and had earned the points. I had to then go through the cumbersome process of getting that transferred to ABIM and then pay for those mock certification. Again, it was I had to retroactively pay for something I wasn't using to get the privilege to get my current mock for what I need blessed. And that's what I did.
No, this is an example, though, if you think about it holistically, it's an example when no matter how much we actually try to change this, at the end of the day, they hold all the cards.
Yeah, one of the strongest, you know, voices out there, I would like to think, against the ABM, just submitted. I won't be great. I just handed it over. Just handed them the cash.
They took all of the truth.
They won. Their geniuses just handed it over, gave them the money.
Aaron, what do you say to people out there who may argue that these maintenance of certification, these longitudinal knowledge assessment, this recertification are really good to assure that you're staying up to speed? Quality control, quality assurance, you're providing good quality care, you're staying current, we're taking good care of patients, and the ABIM is just making sure that you're doing what you're supposed to do to help patients.
I mean, there's this the argument, I mean, prove it, which they haven't. And right? As of this morning, I was not certified. All I did was just wrote him a check for $2,000.
And now you're certified.
Yeah, well, it's going to go through. It's going to take, I mean, I'm
but
still-
But you'll be certified.
Yes, I will be certified next week. And I am no more of a knowledgeable physician than I was. I'm actually less knowledgeable. Usually I spend Fridays reading.
Yeah, you could have read.
Today I wasted the whole day, aggravated, a lot of swearing. Wife wasn't thrilled when I told her what was going on. It was just a whole day. So that's what I would tell them.
We are members of ASH, the American Society of Hematology. I'm a member of ASCO. You're probably a member of ASCO as well. I don't know.
Just ASH.
I mean, I've had an opportunity to speak with ASH leadership, with ASCO leadership. They haven't done much. I mean, I know they say they want to. They want to listen. They want to do X, Y, and Z, but they haven't done much. I mean, how can we get these organizations to actually listen to us?
Problem is, and I'm going to be honest, the presence of these organizations are actually really good people, but they're shifted out every year, right? Or so I know for ASH, it's every year. So the physicians that are appointed, it's almost more ceremonial. And I think who's in charge of these organizations are administrators or administrators type, and I they don't care.
How do we
I'm kind of
get
done with organizations.
How do we get them to care? I agree with you.
Because the person changes every year and the physicians are good. And
they change the presidents of ASCO and ASH, they change every year, but the organization has a structure and an org structure. I don't know how to get them to listen to us.
It's just, I don't know either. And what's most perplexing is like all physicians, especially now, realize this. How do we somehow unite and take this down? I don't know. No, it's very frustrating. It's mind-boggling. This whole experience today was just like, it's like crazy. It's like crazy land.
One of the things that often happens is that the physicians may take the path of, you know, lowest resistance. And they just say,
I did it today. Gave him $2,000, least resistance.
But otherwise, you'd have been fired, Aaron.
No, I know. So, I mean, at this point, I truly think the only solution, I think we've definitely raised an awareness over the last year. The anger's there. We've been vocal. But I think it's really up to people like Dr. Wes Fisher and similar people. I think it's going to have to, unfortunately, go through the courts. So hopefully what I described today is deemed by legal people as illegal. And that will be, I really think that's really the only way at this point.
The thing is, like, we don't know the law. I mean, we don't understand the law. It just appears illegal, but I have no idea. I mean, obviously, you're not a lawyer, neither am I. But it just looks, it just smells not right.
It's definitely not right. Whether it's illegal, I don't know. Right? It's definitely not right.
Right.
And I don't know if what they did to me today was illegal. I can't.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I mean, we don't know if it's illegal or not, but we certainly, it just doesn't sound right.
Anyone with a brain, if you explain this, would say this is, you're getting kind of screwed over here. Whether it's legal is a different story. So, right. So what are the solutions other than the law? I mean, I plead, if we do this, none of my colleagues, why are anyone volunteering their time for this organization? I know why they are, because it looks good.
Why?
And they might believe.
Why? Why? Why?
I don't know. I at every talk for the rest of my life, I will be starting with the spiel of the ABM and the evil. I won't tell when I'm invited to speak. I'll just do that. Will be the start. I want people. I don't know. I know very knowledgeable, great people who are part of that organization. I don't know.
I mean,
I know why. I mean, there's.
But you know what? Look, I think for junior faculty, maybe they get enamored by having something on their resume that they're doing, writing questions for others. But you recall several months back, I got into it on Twitter with one of the physicians I highly respect and I admire and was a phenomenal physician, Dr. Maury Gertz, who is the chair of the hematology board for the ABIM. And in the exchange we've had together, brief exchange, because he doesn't respond to me anymore, but in the brief exchange that we had, he genuinely believes that this actually helps hematologists stay up to date. I mean, I really believe he genuinely believed that.
Whatever. I mean, I Maury Gertz is a smart doctor and a great clinician and knows more about hematology than just about all of us. I 100% disagree with him on this, and he should quit that board. I just can't, I don't want anything to do with him at this point. If that's I don't have anything to do with him anyways, but like,
I'm enrolled in the longitude.
He works for that organization.
But like, I think obviously he's not alone. And I like your point. How do we get physicians?
He's not alone amongst people who already work for them. I don't know anyone, I mean, I guess it's enticing. You're going to be leader of the hematology or pulmonology board. Like, it's enticing. I'm not even talking about money. It sounds academic important.
So how do we get them? Like, I guess my question is, how do we get these folks who still believe that this is serving a higher academic purpose to see what 90% of us are seeing? We've done the podcast. We've done the petitions.
Yeah, I mean,
we've gone on Twitter. Like,
if I hosted a conference or any sort of academic conference, they wouldn't be.
It's weird, isn't it? Like, it's hard to.
I mean,
the other thing is, you know, we had the NSA, the NB Pass, and I've had the pleasure of meeting Dr. Paul Tiersten, and we talked to him. And, you know, it's an alternative to the ABIM, possibly, but the NB Pass has not been able to get a lot of support from institutions, hospitals, and payers. So I don't know what where that's going.
Well, let's clarify for listeners. So it should be a solution, but it's not for people like me, unfortunately. Which, first of all, everyone should join that. I think it's not a lot of money, and numbers speak in what we're doing. It's not a solution for university physicians or many academics that work at ACGME accredited institutions that teach, and teaching is my passion. And in our hospital's bylaws and any other ACGME teaching institution, the ACGME will only allow doctors to work at that teaching university if they are boarded in ABIM or ABMS like things. That is in their rules, okay? So unless the ACGME got rid of that, the hospital really could, right? It's not illegal to practice medicine without an ABIM board. It's not. I have a board in California, but it is per the ACGME, you can't work at ACGME institution unless you're ABIM certified. So how do we change that? Well, we need to somehow get ACGME into these conversations and listen to us, but they're unreachable. You can't.
Have you tried reaching the
ACGME? Yeah, we've all emailed them. I've tried to get them on Twitter. They won't discuss, but that is the root cause. I mean, honestly, if they could get rid of that, then there is nothing preventing me from dropping the ABIM, at least where I work. Because there are doctors, there are actually quite a few doctors who have dropped ABIM because they work at a place that says, we don't need it. We take MBPAS. And we're not an ACGME program, so the large private practices, but any sort of larger practice that has fellows, residents, they're bound to be, they have to do this.
You know, and the ACGME does not need to drop the ABIM. They just should say you can do the ABIM or you can do NBPass.
They won't, because they're together in bed. And I'm not a cynic, but it has to be all money. Why do I know it's all money? Because today, this morning, I did nothing to advance my knowledge other than give them $2,000, and now I'm going to be okay. So, right? Yeah. Like, I'm not a better doctor all of a sudden because I gave $2,000, but I am now. I'm now going to be certified on their website.
Have you been able to talk locally? I mean, I think everything is local. So your ability maybe to at least have a conversation with the credentialing office at UCSD, like, have you been able to just at least say like, hey, just hear me out for like 30 minutes. Let me explain why, like, just to have a dialogue. Are they willing to listen to you? You're on staff. You're well-respected. You take care of patients. Would they listen to you, or is it?
No, but today I've sent out another round of emails. But I know what they're going to say, and I can't really argue. They'd be like, what do you want us to do? This is an ACGME rule.
But you know, the reason that's important is because it seems like the root cause is ACGME.
Yeah, but the other root cause is if all of our CMOs, chairs of medicine, all got together and said, this all sucks. This is rotten. You're screwing us over. I do think that would go a long way. I really do. The board can't continue if every or at least 75% of leading physicians in our country are bound together saying this is ridiculous at this point. So either they're in on it or just don't care or just don't know. I mean, a lot of these older doctors who are in these positions, they're grandfathered out. ABIM's genius. They knew to do that. I mean, right? They grandfathered them out, and they're not thinking about this, and not on Twitter or not on whatever. So I truly, you know, again, I do think it would go. I mean, Vincent Rajkumar, I mean, voices like him who have, you know, I'm just a guy on Twitter, but he's a legit dude, you know, and big and those.
You're
voices
a legit dude too. Come on.
No, I know, but you know what I mean. Like, we need those voices to get together. The chairs of medicine, CMOs. Or even CEOs of hospitals being like, this isn't right for our physicians, but they haven't yet. But those that kind of unity and statements would go a long way, I think.
I agree with you. I think some of the problem with these folks is possibly, A, they're too busy, honestly, and they say,
you know what,
you know, I'm not going to deal with this.
That's when
one.
You try to make change, it's work.
Yeah. And number two, they don't have skin in the game.
Yeah.
It's either they are grandfathered or, frankly, they don't need to be recertified. They have a completely 100% administrative job. I mean, if you are CMO of an organization, maybe you don't need to be board certified because you're not seeing patients. You're just basically, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I presume you probably don't need it. Maybe you do in some hospitals.
No, you don't. I mean, and again, like, should a CMO be seeing patients? Probably. I mean, right? That's a hard job. They're busy. So, like, it's very hard to be a clinician and something else.
Right,
so,
right.
You're right. And I think that's part of the problem. And again, you got to hand it to ABIM. They handle this perfectly. As Dr. Barron said in our interview, we grandfathered for purely political reasons. I'm not making this up. That's what this they did. That
he said that. He said that for sure. I saw a tweet from you earlier today, and I think it was a tweet. First of all, your thread was actually great, and but you had a tweet about Dr. West and I are going to sue the ABIM as we had enough. Dr. Fisher has been at this for years, and it's time we all pitch in and help. And you have a fundraiser by Practicing Physicians of America pertaining to this, recognizing that neither of us is a lawyer. Do you have understanding of what that means? Like, what would be the basis of an actual lawsuit?
So I don't know the specifics of the lawsuit, but it deals with some of the stuff that we just talked about with tying in medicine to this and us not knowing, paying these fees to be able to do the other thing and the monopoly that they have and not allowing MBPAS. But what I will say, this is all Dr. West Fisher's work. He started all this. And, you know, I think, right, whenever I have a physician, physicians care for each other. I think that's what's cool. Like, we're brothers and sisters. Like, we're all together. And like, whenever a physician colleague, even if I don't know them that well, they're like, my friend's got cancer. I'm more than happy to talk. Like, give $10 to this. Like, this is something we're doing for each other. I do think lawsuits, if successful, will end them. And this money will be used purely to pay legal fees. Lawyers are expensive. They're gonna spend a lot of time. And I do encourage everyone to donate money to that cause, because I do think right now, like, the easiest way to end this madness is just a lawsuit saying what they do is illegal. It's possible that it won't be deemed illegal, and then we have to.
Well, I think the issue is that in prior attempts, the judges have dismissed these lawsuits and they've never even made it to court. Because they have to go to court in order to provide, to show evidence, and you get discovery and all of these things. And unless you get into the actual courtroom, a lot of the information cannot be even shown to judges and juries. Did you have a chance to speak to any lawyers?
Yeah, I spoke to a lawyer. Just basically, what I told the lawyer was exactly what I just told this audience listening, the story of what happened to me. And I forwarded them the receipts and documentation of the interaction. And again, I don't know if what they did was wrong or not. It might not be. That's why I sent it to a lawyer to say, hey, is what they're doing to me somehow not illegal, or there's probable cause that it isn't? And does this warrant further investigation? So yes, it has been shared with lawyers.
But I mean, at least did the lawyer say, okay, this seems like something at least we're going to look at?
He says, this makes no sense. This is madness. And
right.
But again, I think what I don't know, and I'm being very honest here, is I took the Board of Medicine in 2014. I'm sure I signed some stuff. I don't know.
Right.
I don't know. Is it possible they said what I did today might be in the future? Yeah.
Look, I'm pretty.
I don't know.
Well, yeah. You don't know. I'm pretty certain we all signed in fine prints that they have the ability to change the rules anytime.
Yeah.
I'm very certain that there's something out there that we signed, and they reserve the right to change some of the rules and the requirements with or without notice or whatever it is. I think that's probably kind of legalese that you see it in many contracts. And I suspect they probably had that. And we signed without even looking. It's like almost when you accept the terms and conditions when you go into whatever, a website, and you just don't know what's in there.
No, but the question is it beyond reason? You know, right? They're clearly a monopoly, and no way did little young Aaron Goodman doctor know that he was going to be a He-Man to Ankh certified, and that somehow at some point a decade later that would be tied to not paying some old fees for med. I mean, like, is there enough to say that what they're doing is just out of reason? And I don't know legally what they consider out of reason or not.
You know what's so weird about this monopoly type of thing? Just, you know, and I know we're probably going a little bit over time, but what's so interesting about this in a very disheartening way is that this is a self-appointed organization. This is not basically an organization that was self-appointed, like elected by the physicians, and we vote to what the bylaws and the for God's sake, sometimes if you live in a condo association, there are bylaws, people have to vote on this. I mean, like you know, this is like this is one of the biggest monopolies I have seen in my lifetime.
This is doctors screwing over doctors. That's what this is. And right.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
if tomorrow physicians that worked at ABIM or whatever said, we're done, it would cease to exist. They need
if physicians stop working.
It would end in a second. But why would they? They have personal gain, either financially or academically, they truly may think that what they're doing is just.
Well, I mean, I think again, there are some physicians out there that will always argue that these tests and these exams are basically checks and balances to make sure that the physicians are aware of advances. And my response to this is, as somebody who is, by the way, enrolled in the LKA, Longitudinal Knowledge Assessment, it is a matter of how fast I can find the answer on Google or up to date, because the things that I know, and the things I don't know, I'm going to research on the web.
But how could they argue what happened to me today is, you don't need to keep up with medicine, says the CEO or CMO, and I didn't. But then I still have to give them $2,000. And I hate to break it to you, I didn't do any mock at all for internal medicine, right? I didn't. I did my heme mock, you know.
Like, well, they wouldn't let you do the heme mock unless you pay back the internal medicine, which you are planning on deactivating anyway.
Yeah, that argument is wrong. I did not better myself. First of all, the mock don't help me because you just do some clicks, but whatever. Like, all doctors get done as fast as humanly possible, whether it's searching random up-to-date articles or submitting.
So how do you get the mock points, by the way? How did they tell you to get mock points?
They said whatever way possible. So,
no, but do they have like a list of how you get mock points?
There's a list, and I'll tell it. Hey guys, you want to get your mock done fast?
How do you do it?
Up to date, just type in something,
click
the article, and every time you do that, you get 0.5.
Nice. So I have to do this like 200 times.
200
I'll get 100
times.
Mach points.
That's it. Five
so just
years.
Click the article.
And that gets you the ability to then give them, you have to do that and then give them the money to certify. But that's it, you know.
But how do they know you clicked the article? Like, you submit the articles you clicked?
Well, I mean, I read the articles.
But how do they know that you did, like, how do you?
So, I mean, for UpToDate, they have an agreement with UpToDate.
You have your own name and your
so
password.
So I logged in UpToDate using my own personal UpToDate. Through the university, but you can have your own account. And then you link in your ABIM ID. I know this, but I did this today. And then you click articles. And once you accumulate up points, you then hit submit. And right now, like for me, it's my mock's been submitted to them. But or you could go to ASH or any other conference, already do your knowledge. And even though you've learned, if you want the mock, you gotta send it. That's the whole point. It's bullshit, right? If they care about learning, I went to ASH. I went to ASH when I learned. But it doesn't count for ABIM until you submit it to them and pay them the fee. It's not about learning. It's about money. If it was about learning, then going to ASH and earning the CME would be enough. And that's the crux of the argument. They cannot argue that. I could go to ASH, earn the CME, but not submit to ABIM, and I'm not good. I have to submit to ABIM and pay the mock fees.
That is a fundamental.
That is the that's there's no argument.
And that's a fundamental difference between the NB pass and ABIM.
Yes.
The NB pass, basically, I have the three NB pass: internal medicine, hematology, oncology. All what I showed them is my CME. I have over 100 hours of CME hours, ASH, ASCO, all of these meetings. They verified this. I paid my dues, which were $189 for 2 years, by the way. One time every 2 years, so less than $100 per year. and I got my three certifications.
And those fees, and I understand why they need those fees. They have administrative, they have to pay their administrative staff to do the busy work. I mean, in an ideal world, we don't have to do any of this, but like, I get it. We need some sort of rubber stamp, right? That's what this is at this point. Yeah.
Aaron, I know it's getting late where you are, and your wife is going to kill us both. And
yes.
So to preserve our livelihood and not to die, what we should end this with, maybe a glimmer of hope to listeners and viewers. I have sometimes some folks who reach out to me and say, so what's new? Are we making any progress? And I usually have no answer to that. I feel sometimes we have little progress and other times we're just going backwards.
I think this latest thing, because it's not me that just happened, there's many of us in the situation I was in today, is that should reignite the fire again. And I'm hopeful one of these lawsuits makes it to the court. I think if a jury or someone heard this, that they, again, it's common sense here at this point, that we could get the right verdicts.
I
also hope, please, anyone who works for ABM or is asked to, just stop at this point. Like, what do you, I mean, like, right? I mean,
do they realize
if you meet someone and they go, I do this for ABM, I like, you're going to respect them anymore?
No. Do they realize that they would be one of the most hated physicians in America?
Yeah, to any young people out there, if you're asked, you will be despised. And I don't think people, when they sign up to work them, think about this and realize what they're doing. Yeah, it's just not worth it.
The other thing is, there's a petition that you and Wes Fisher about donating money to help in legal fees if this will ever progress that route. And lastly, maybe it's time for you to have a new petition, and that petition should be about end the backup fees or the back, whatever the, you know.
Another petition. I think right now, more important is funding Wes's legal stuff. You know, the petition did serve a purpose. It kind of started the talk and what we're doing now. But like, I don't know if any amount of signatures, I mean, ABM is not going to voluntarily stop doing this. But I want someone at a conference to be like, who discloses they work for ABM, and I want the audience to be like, start booing. I mean, that's my dream. Yeah. You know, where we with like that kind of level of, I want some vitriol. I want people to be disgusted and angry. It's the point where it's just people who are administrators and ABM people having their own conferences together. That's the only thing they can talk, their own echo chamber. We need to.
The last ABIM Foundation tweet was from December 13, 2023. So they're obviously staying quiet, just so you know. And then the ABIM ABIM Cert, which is the other account. There's ABIM Foundation. There's the ABIM certification. It's not loading. Here it is.
I think it was October. They've all.
Yeah, the last one was actually October, and it is from someone by the name of Faith Abu Dunreen. I'm grateful and happy to celebrate another milestone, my medical journey, ABIM board certified. But this is again, this is initial certification. And we never argued that we are not against the initial certification. We have said that many, many times.
There's a reason why ABM's just completely silent. They know that any interaction will only do them. They are trying to just skate by and be that people in the background that collect their money. They've wisened up. I mean, they were so stupid to say do this shit on your vacation and tweet about it. You know, their IQ's increased a little bit to at least stop doing that. Yep.
Do you think folks are in oncology or hematology would be willing to not pay their ASH and ASCO membership fees to put some economic pressure? Because I doubt that this will happen.
I am at the point where I am basically done with any sort of medical organization. Any organization I'm part of, fees and keeping up with it just adds stress and money. I don't, at this point, I'm kind of done with all that. And ASH is a good organization. They do well, but like, I'm kind of done with all these things. Just let me take care of my patients, take care of my family. At this point, that's all I want to do and all teach. Right.
Well, my friend, I appreciate you jumping on the podcast. And I
it's
hope
late for
that,
you. What is it? 11 o'clock, 12.
Hey, that's the life of a podcaster. Don't you worry. We podcast day and night. Does not matter. We never sleep.
And you do, I'm being serious, you owe us a few more of these shirts. Or
Yes. And as you know, you also appeared on my other podcast right here, the He-Monk Pulse, which we're making t-shirts for the He-Monk Pulse. So you're going to get another more t-shirts.
I love the He-Monk Pulse. Happy to be on. I had a rapid fire.
Hey, your Castleman's disease on the He-Monk Pulse was a hit, I'm telling you.
Yeah. Was it a hit? Good.
Yeah, it was a hit.
You ever want to do some Erdheim Chester? There's a lot of Erdheim Chester.
I need to do something I know a little bit about so I could be somewhat intelligent in the discussion.
Do you want me to go over myeloma maintenance therapy or the role of selinexor?
Well, you're going to be coming to my first Hemonc Pulse live meeting, and you're going to be on a panel on myeloma. So get ready.
Oh yeah, I'm a moderator, right?
You're on one of the panels. I put you on strategic one of the panels. Aaron Goodman, Papahim, thank you so much for coming on Healthcare Unfiltered. I really appreciate it. Now go take care of your wife and kids.
Thanks for having me. I'll see you later, bye.
Folks, thank you so much for listening. I appreciate you supporting this podcast. Don't forget to rate it, subscribe to it, and let your friends and colleagues know about this podcast, Healthcare Unfiltered, on my other podcast, The He-Monk Pulse. Check out my books, Toxic Exposure, that came out last year, and my upcoming book, The Cancer Journey, Understanding Diagnosis, Treatments, Recovery, and Prevention. Check out my website, shadinabhan.com, and follow me on Twitter, @shadinabhan, and let me know what you think about this podcast, other podcasts, as well as topics that you would like me to cover. Before I let you go, I'm going to leave you with a quote from Alexander the Great. I am not afraid of an army of lions led by sheep. I am afraid of an army of sheep led by a lion. Until next time.